Oh, it's so excellent. Yes. What's going on? This is the, I'll just play in the background a little bit. This is the, I guess, inaugural debut, whatever you want to call it, Jay's Joint show. I guess I'm kind of ripping off Spike Lee there with the joint thing, but it's alliteration, people. It works. So anyway, this is going to be my kind of solo arts and culture podcast where I talk about music and film and stuff like that and maybe just some of the random minutiae of my life, but probably more the arts and culture thing because my life is a barren wasteland of non-interest. Anyway, so what's going on, listeners? Hopefully some of you have followed from the Jar Show, which I plan on still doing, by the way. I haven't completely forsaken the Jar Show, but or not even close to forsaken the Jar Show, but I decided to do this myself because, I don't know, one or two people actually liked me talking into a microphone about music and stuff, so what the hell. It's actually really funny when you think about it. It's someone was it Louis C.K.? Some comedian was talking about how ludicrous it is and how you have to be such an egomaniac just to be able to, just to want to be in a career like this, to assume that what you're talking about people are going to actually find interesting. So it's bizarre because I don't really think I have that huge of an ego, but yet here I am. So I guess I'm the asshole. I did a little podcast on Friday for the Jar Show about best albums, best rock albums, that is, of 1992, which kind of inspired me to do some more of these. And this one's going to be devoted to, well, the year following, 1993. And while I didn't intend this to be really a rock compilation, it looks like most everything on that I have on this list is, with the exception of one. So I decided to start off with Tool, because Undertow, one of their best albums in my opinion, came out in 1993. It was actually their first official album. Opiate, the EP, came out the year prior. I think 92 is when Opiate came out, but just a six song little EP, so it doesn't, I guess, qualify as being an album per se. But anyway, Undertow, the first debut real full-length album, is awesome, to say the least. What a terrific album. And as you're hearing Sober here in the background, probably their most recognizable hit. I would think, even after all these years they've been making music, they only have, you know, it's kind of funny because they've been around for quite a while. They only really have four studio albums, which is not saying that's, you know, not enough. I mean, particularly the last two albums were very, very involved. Lateralus was more of a concept album, which I still need, even after all these years, I still need to listen to a little bit more closely because my favorite Tool albums are both this one, Undertow, and Enema, which came out, I believe, in 96. So, Tool. What to say about Tool? They're a fantastic kind of prog-ish kind of rock band. Kind of alt-metal, kind of a bunch of stuff in between. Of course, it's kind of funny, you know. Durner. That wasn't supposed to be the funny part. What I find interesting is that with a lot of bands, the frontman usually gets most of the credit. And not to say that Maynard James Keenan, the lead singer of Tool, is not a fantastic vocalist. I should say fantastic. I was told that I said that way too much last time. Not only is he a phenomenal vocalist, because he is, and also a great lyricist too, but my God, there's so much else going on in Tool, from Danny Carey's drumming to Adam Jones's guitar work here, of course, which you can hear a little bit in the background. And a lot of people might not know this, but Adam Jones is actually also an artist. He did all of the, to my knowledge, all of the Tool videos, which are mostly stop-motion animation. And I had a little surprise when I watched Jurassic Park behind the scenes, because I actually really enjoy that movie, Jurassic Park. I know it's kind of corny, but it's a fun movie. And when I was watching the behind the scenes, they showed a bunch of the different artists who were working on the miniatures and painting them. And sure enough, Adam Jones was one of the guys that worked on Jurassic Park as a miniature artist. So I thought that was pretty cool. Anyway, that's the song Sober there, ending in the background. And probably my first introduction to Tool was Sober. I remember listening to this album, in particular that song, just ad nauseum, going to a school trip we had at Cape Henlopen when I was in junior high school. I had a friend, Ryan, who was like, you know, if you like such and such, you'll probably like Tool. And so I listened to this album just over and over again on the bus ride over to Cape Henlopen. And of course, on the way back, it's, I remember I had to actually purchase this album at some random little store in downtown Lancaster. It wasn't even like, you know, a Sam Goody or a Tower or Virgin Records. It was some obscure little record shop we had in Lancaster, and I had to order this album because it was on back order. I remember just that, for some reason to me, that was just so cool and so edgy that I couldn't just walk into the store and buy it. I had to like specially order it, which of course is completely absurd. I'm sure there are thousands of copies waiting at the mall, but we didn't go that route. Anyway, that is Sober. Like I said, probably one of the more recognizable Tool songs. However, this album is chock full of really cool songs. In fact, Prison Sex was also pretty popular back in the day. This had a really, really bleak, somewhat harrowing video to it as well. I mean, it's, you know, subject matter on this song, if you can glean from the title, Prison Sex, isn't exactly happy and fun and bubbly. But the videos are all so cool. They're so totally twisted and dark, and I love the stop motion. I think that just adds to the creepiness of it. This is Prison Sex. And I don't know, I mean, I like to think that as, you know, a quasi-musician myself, I hate to say I'm a musician because I'm not making money off of it, but, you know, I dabble, right? I've made some stuff, which I'll play at some point, not in this show, but, see, that's how humble I am. I'm not even playing my own music on my own show. I don't know what it is. Lateralist was such a layered, complex concept album with really sprawling tunes. And this one, you know, between this album and Enema, yeah, there are a couple songs that get pretty lengthy, but the structure of this album is more just, you know, it's a barrage of songs. It's, Lateralist is a little bit too, maybe too high in terms of intellect for me. I just couldn't digest it as well because I'm not cool enough. I don't know. I need to listen to that album again now that I'm playing all this stuff. But anyway, Maynard, great singer. Now, if you don't know, he actually, of course, not only sang in such bands as Tool and Perfect Circle and also Pussifer. Yes, I said that correctly. Also a winemaker, if you didn't know that. He actually has, I think it's called Merkin Cellars, Merkin Vineyards, out in Arizona somewhere. And he's kind of turned to the winemaking business, which is pretty cool. I actually had only one of his wines from Caduceus. Wait, is it? I don't know. I'm so confused. It's like Merkin, Caduceus, all these different names. One of them is the name of the vineyard. But I had one of his wines called Chupacabra, which was a red blend. It was good. I enjoyed it. I like this part. Here we go. Yeah, I remember still feeling very insecure because one of the things that I dread the most about recording is doing the vocals. I don't know why, I'm incredibly insecure when it comes to my vocal talent. And I have a couple of friends that love Tool and regard them in the highest as being probably the best band ever that existed. And I'm not saying they're necessarily wrong, but it just gives me this great insecurity complex about how great Maynard is. And I was watching an interview with him and, of all people, Carson Daly, who was just so out of his element trying to interview a guy like Maynard. And Maynard confessed that even he was like, you know, it's hard for me to sing a lot of these songs now that I'm in my 40s and 50s. But I don't know if he's quite 50 yet, but he was saying that even back then, he's like, I don't know what I was thinking, writing vocals like this that I could barely sing back then. Now it's a real struggle, which is interesting if you listen to some of your favorite artists over the years, like... I was watching a Nine Inch Nails video where they played Last, which I know I said Last in the last show gets like no love, but I was watching a video where they played it live, and you know, Trent's getting older, so they had to transpose the song down two or three keys. And I remember hearing it like Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer live not too long ago, and he did the same thing, because you know, when you get older, you're Not everything's as tight as it was when you were young. Interpret that how you'd like. This next song I'm going to play from this album, I don't know if I'll play the whole thing. I really wasn't intending on playing all these songs in their entirety, but considering I'm doing them the disservice of talking over all of them. This was one of the first songs I remember had to, learned how to play on guitar by myself. Really not that difficult. It's a song called Bottom, which has some great vocals to it. But also, one of the cool things about Bottom is that it is graced by the crazy Henry Rollins, formerly of Black Flag. Let's see if I can skip to his little thing. Because he has a little, like, spoken word section in the song.
If I let you,
there he is.
You would make me destroy myself. In order to survive you, I must first survive myself. And I can sink no further. And I cannot forgive you. There's no choice but to confront you.
No choice at all?
To engage you. To erase you. Gone to great lengths to expand my threshold of pain. I'll use my mistakes against you.
Come on, surely there's got to be another choice, Henry.
There's no other choice.
All right, fine. Have it your way.
Shameless now. Nameless now.
Oh, you can hear a Maynard now creeping into the background with his vocals.
No one now. But my soul must be iron. My fear is naked. I'm naked and fearless. And my fear is naked.
No, oh, I gotta love it. Oh, Maynard. And then finally, I feel like I would be remiss if I didn't play the title track, or at least, you know, the beginning of the title track of this album, Undertow, which has a cool little riff. The other great thing about this album is the liner notes and the art that comes inside of it. Each member of the band did something kind of bizarre. I mean, it's hard to describe, but they each have their own kind of tortured visage going on. And Maynard had this weird, it's like one of those dental things that, like, it's like Clockwork Orange style. It holds your mouth open, and then there's like a magnifying glass in front of it. And he had a lot of fun with that photo shoot. And I remember it came out later in Marilyn Manson's post Antichrist Superstar album. Like, people were like way into that because he started wearing that, I don't know, in some of his videos. It's like, dude, you ripped off Maynard. Not that I don't like Marilyn, but okay. Tool, good band, and we'll see if they have anything for us in the future. The last album was 10,000 Days, came out several years ago, so who knows what's going on with them. Maybe Maynard will stick to winemaking, who knows. Anyway, good old Tool. So that's an album. I guess these are just recommendations. If you don't already own these, go and download them or buy them. If you can actually buy the physical, tangible item, I would recommend that higher, more highly, because I think actually having the physical thing is really nice. Next album, this is going to be one that's going to be kind of lost in some people because they're not a mainstream band. I'm not saying this because I think I'm cool. Discovered this band because of the Crow soundtrack, and they have a cool song called Golgotha Tenement Blues in that soundtrack. But this is a band called Machines of Loving Grace, and they're kind of an industrial-ish rock kind of outfit from, I believe, Arizona. And they only released three albums and then just kind of faded into nowhere, which is kind of a mystery to me because all their albums are rather good. And this is one of those, like back in the day when MTV used to, I know I'm going to get criticized for saying, why doesn't MTV play videos anymore? Not that I even watch MTV anymore, but back in the day, they used to actually play music and stuff a lot more. And they had it, but they did have a couple reality shows, one which was called Sandblast. It was just really corny. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. It was like, trying to think what kind of show would be like now. What's that stupid show where there are all the obstacles and Wipeout? I think it's kind of like that. It was kind of like that kind of show. They had two couples that were pitted against each other, and they had to do all kinds of stupid games and stuff. But they used to play really kick-ass music in the background, and they used to play, actually, Machines of Loving Grace quite a bit. And one of the songs I remember a lot they used to play was the song Butterfly Wings. And that goes a little something like this. Definitely a cool groove, and gosh, I'm taking so much time doing this. I'm just saying that because I'm looking at the time. It's like, wow, already 20 minutes have gone by. Yes, good album, Concentration from Machines of Loving Grace. Here's another snippet off this album. This is a song called Limiter. Limiter. Sorry, let me be more articulate. Proper diction and enunciation. Cool song. And then next, actually immediately following that, is a song called If I Should Explode. And the lyrics are so bizarre. In fact, the lyrics on this album, I haven't looked up. They had three albums, by the way. Machines of Loving Grace, their self-title was the first, then Concentration. After that was this album called Guilt, G-I-L-T. And I don't know if I paid as much attention to the lyrics on that one, but man, there's some funky lyrics on this album for sure. I think that require a higher intellect than mine to really understand. Here's this If I Should Explode song. Cool song.
I don't know.
Okay, good song, but what the hell is she talking about? If I should explode into gasping Mary, please take me home to where the crosses row. Someone help me out with that, because I really don't understand what the fuck that means. Anyway, Concentration, recommended. Get it. Again, 93. Jesus, I'm moving slowly. Next album is from a band that I fell in love with when I was about 15, called KMFDM, which the name of the band has drawn a lot of conversation and controversy because people were wondering what the hell KMFDM stood for. And it stands for, at least to my knowledge, stands for Kein Mitleid für die Mehrheit, which means no pity for the majority, although they sometimes would switch around Mitleid and Mehrheit just to make it make no sense, because in German that would be like no majority for the pity or whatever. And it wouldn't even make sense grammatically. But whatever, the point is, that's what it's supposed to mean, as far as I'm concerned. But they did, at one point, do a contest to see who could come up with the craziest name. I think they had something like, you know, several thousand submissions. And, of course, the one that everyone remembers is either Kill Motherfucking Depeche Mode or Kylie Minogue. Wait, yeah, Kylie Minogue Fuck Depeche Mode, something like that. I don't know. Regardless, they're a cool little industrial band that actually was formed in France, of all places, even though the founding members are both German. And the one that's actually still doing his thing, Sasha Kinitsko, is a cool guy. I actually had the pleasure of meeting him once outside of the Trocadero in Philly after seeing one of their shows. It was actually when they sort of quote-unquote disbanded and created a band called MDFMK, which is just so totally clever. yeah. But anyway, it was a good show. I got to meet Skold from the band, as well as Lucia from the band, and also Sasha. And he was a really cool, totally down-to-earth, humble guy. But the point is, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the album that came out in 93, which is called... Now, this is another thing that I haven't looked up because I'm stupid. The album's called Angst, but it could possibly be called Angst, because that's a word in German. And the thing that's interesting is that Angst in German does not mean the same as angst in English. Angst, of course, you know, teenage angst, pent-up anger and frustration, whatever the hell. In German, Angst means fear. So I'm not exactly sure which they're going for, but KMFDM is an exceedingly prolific band, and they put out albums at least, gosh, I would say from the late 80s. Yeah, late 80s. They probably put an album out like almost once every year, which is pretty impressive. And this album, Angst, whichever you want to call it, has one of their more recognizable songs, which is, you know, not really saying too much because, again, they're not a really mainstream band. But they did get some airplay on MTV, mostly through the Beavis and Butthead show. And they did highlight this song, A Drug Against War, from the album Angst, whatever you want to say. It goes something like this.
Bomb the living bejeepers out of those horses.
I'm only bringing it down because it occurred to me that I've said twice now. It goes a little something like this. What the hell am I talking about? It goes exactly like this. Dumb. So there's Drug Against War, of course, not all of it. And they had some really interesting videos too, KMFDM, because much like Tool, they kind of stuck with the same artistic vision. So whereas Tool used stop motion animation, KMFDM used all animation. It was just regular hand drawn stuff from a guy called Brute. And I don't know, this is another thing I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it's Brute or Brute. But he had done all of the artwork for KMFDM, or not all, well, I would say the gross majority, probably 90% of their album covers were drawn by Brute, and he animated this video, which was basically a tribute to all their album covers. Actual covers, not song covers, but, you know, artwork. And then they have, this is a cool song called Glory off the same album, Angst. Yeah, buddy. I regretfully inform that the last time I saw KMFDM, which was actually quite a few years ago, when would that have been? 2003 or 4? I saw them play at the House of Blues in Anaheim. And actually, sadly enough, the big reason I went to go see that show is because one of my favorite bands, Acumen Nation's side project, DJ Accurcrack, which is the drum and bass outfit, was their opening band. And I really wanted to go see those guys play, or specifically more the two guys, Jason and unfortunately recently passed away Jamie Duffy. But the thing that sucked about KMFDM is that Sasha was forgetting all of his lyrics, and it was really starting to irritate me. Now, again, when you have that big of a body of work, maybe things can get jumbled around in your brain. But you think if you work in the same set list for your tour, give or take a few songs, you kind of like maybe remember your lyrics. So that kind of bummed me out, but it was still a good show. And then I have here's another cool song from this album called, the song is called Lust. If you couldn't tell already, KMFDM is definitely an industrial band. More on the, techno dance side of industrial than, that's not necessarily true. They do use a lot of guitar work, but... this is a little bit more dancey than it is metal, clearly. The steady beats and everything. But KMFDM is one of those industrial bands that didn't really seem to get their due credit. Of course, the most famous, quote-unquote, quasi-whatever industrial band you want to say is Nine Inch Nails. He clearly brought it to the limelight. Whereas, not even Ministry get that much recognition, and certainly KMFDM did not, along with Machines of Love and Grace, for that matter. That singing is actually not, the woman is clearly not Sasha, but the male voice there is not Sasha either. That is N. Esch, who my sister and I always love for KMFDM. He's a total character. And clearly, that is not English either. He's sprechen in Deutsch. And the chorus there, he's saying, hold me tight, never let go. Isn't that cute? So that's a little bit of KMFDM there. Gonna move on because I'm already in a half an hour and I've only done 3 bands. This is sad. Next band is another one I could talk about for way too long and really annoy the hell out of everybody. And that is the beautiful Typo Negative. I could easily do a whole show on them, which I probably will do at some point. But their first album was called Slow, Deep, and Hard, which was really kind of a collection of songs from Peter's band prior to that called Carnivore. And he just kind of took the old songs and worked them up into the new band, because apparently he was under contract with Roadrunner to release another album or something like that. And Carnivore disbanded and blah, 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 and he formed Typo, and he was like, well, what the hell? We still have all these Carnivore songs, and let's just use them. So if you listen to Slow, Deep, and Hard, there is kind of a difference in vibe and tone and style and just an, you know, overall sense that you get from Bloody Kisses, which was their next, technically their next album. They had an album in between called Origin of the Feces, which is really cute. And the original cover album artwork on that was a close-up of Peter's ass taking a dump, but apparently they didn't like that. It wasn't, I guess, being sold at stores too well, so they changed it. But that was supposedly a live album, but it wasn't. I mean, it was live in the sense that they're playing some of their older stuff from Slow, Deep, and Hard, but it's not an actual live album. They dub in all the chants and applause and everything else, so they wanted to give people a general sense of what it was like to be at a Typo show in Brooklyn, which is their hometown, and there's a lot of heckling. It's pretty funny. But their next actual album was Bloody Kisses, which was definitely Beatles inspired, and which Peter has said himself, I'm not cool and saying like, oh, I can easily see the Beatles influence in this album. He has said himself, he's been greatly influenced by Black Sabbath and the Beatles and among other bands. And this one definitely has more pop sensibilities than Slow, Deep, and Hard, which is more of a metal album. And this is still, you know, technically metal, I guess, but their stuff is so melodic, and Peter has such a fantastic voice. Yes, god damn it, fantastic voice. Man, I do say that too much. Actually, before I even play this, I want to play this this beginning of the song from one of their much later albums called Life is Killing Me. And I love this track because it just showcases how ridiculous Peter's range is. He is, in the purest sense, a bass. I sometimes, when I'm reading reviews of things, can't figure out how people label certain people. Like, it's like Trent Reznor with his incredible tenor voice. No, Trent's not really a tenor. He's more of a baritone. Or, Peter Steele being a baritone. No, he's not a baritone. He's a damn-ass bass, for damn sure. Damn it. And this song called Nettie Off Life is Killing Me shows that perfectly. I love this. I like to put this on just to see if I can even get close to attaining this kind of pitch, but I can't. And it's really frustrating, too, because not only does he have a very low voice, but like I said, he has a crazy range. So he can sing very high as well. And I guess maybe people might say he's shouting, but whatever. The point is, the guy can freaking sing. So this is great. I love this. If it actually plays. Hello. Oh, there we go. Just having a problem with the connection there. Some of the instruments will drop out here just a little bit to give you a taste of how ridiculously low his voice is. Here we go.
Lady, no need to cry.
So ridiculous.
Let me wipe those teardrops from your eyes.
I can actually sing that. Hold on. Just in case you missed it, we're going to go back a little bit. Oops. Oh, there we go. Cool. I love this because so many bands... Here, I'll talk about this in a minute. Hold on. But there seems to be a general range of a lot of vocalists, male and female, that kind of populates the scene. And it's cool to have someone sing like this. Here we go again. I love this. It's so awesome. Oh, Peter. But what I was going to say is, if you listen to a lot of songs, I mean, it seems that a lot of the females sing in the lower part of their range, and a lot of the dudes sing in kind of the upper part of the range, so it's kind of homogenous in that sense. And I like a guy that can sing bass for most of his songs. I mean, not that Peter does, but it's cool that he oftentimes will sing in bass, because it's not something you hear that often. Anyway, back to the album that came out in 93, Bloody Kisses. And here is a song called Christian Woman. And
forgive her, for she knows not what she does.
Thank you, Peter.
So here's a little Josh's keyboard here in the background. Typo actually was a band that I discovered in 1996. And although I had known of the band, because there was, again, with all these weird little shops we had in Lancaster, there was one that sold purely rock shirts. It's like all they were. It was just, you know, store the size of my apartment living room, and all they did was they specialized in rock t-shirts. Great shop. I wish there were more places like that, for that matter. But I remember for a long time they had the Bloody Kisses shirt hanging in the window. And I didn't, you know, when Bloody Kisses came out, I was probably 11. So, here we go. So I didn't know too much about the band at this point, but when their album October Rust came out in 96, my sister at that point was in college, and she had signed up for one of those Columbia House record things where you can get like 80,000 albums for, you know, belly button lint. And one of the albums, I think, I don't know, you know, now that I'm talking about it, I'll have to ask her. I can't remember how she got on to think that I would like this band, but she ended up getting October Rust as one of the bands, you know, one of the albums she got for like half a cent. And that was a life-changing album for sure, which I'll play when we do maybe a 1996 show or just a Typo show in general. But man, Typo is awesome. And unfortunately, just like I was talking about Acumen Nation and one of their members, Jamie Duffy, died recently. It was actually a suicide, which really sucks. Peter died a couple of years ago, and he was only 48. He had struggles with cocaine and alcohol and stuff like that. At the time that he died, he was supposedly sober for a little while at least. But I'm not sure if they ever completely determined what killed him. I think it was a heart attack that, you know, was the actual cause of death. But, you know, what led to that heart attack? Was it the drugs? Was it the drinking? Was it the fact that the guy was, you know, 6'7" and kind of a hefty guy by the end of his life? Which he would fully admit, by the way. He would very, very openly talk about his addiction to KFC and Haagen-Dazs, things of that nature. But Peter, man, what an amazing talent. Had such a talent for songwriting. Great vocalist. And just a generally awesome guy. He's so funny. If you ever watch interviews with him or videos of him, he's such a clown. He's the class clown. He's a goofy dude. He likes to make stupid jokes. He likes to make fun of himself. And I again, was fortunate enough to meet him. I've seen Typo play like 10 times. But out of all those 10 times that I saw them play, I got to meet him once, which was my very first Typo show at the Palace in Hollywood when I was a freshman at USC in 99 when they came out with their World Coming Down tour. And I went with my friend Dave, and we sat out all freaking day for this show, which was totally unnecessary. But we decided to be first in line like a bunch of assholes and, you know, sat on, it was on Sunset Boulevard, sitting on Sunset for hours. And when the band showed up to do their sound check and everything like that, Peter was nice enough to come out and do kind of a little impromptu meet and greet with the fans. And he was so funny and gregarious and very humble and so gracious. I mean, he signed everybody's things, and he was really funny. And it's just really too bad that he died, because I think there were still years and years of genius, not only musically, but everything else, to come out of that guy. So it really bums me out. He was one of those guys as an aspiring musician. And even now, still, you know, I'm like thinking of bands I would love to play with, you know, if I could only tour with these bands. Typo is just probably up at the top. Like, my God, how great would it be to tour with Typo Negative? And unfortunately, that for me will not happen. But I got to thank the guy for leaving a legacy of awesomeness and kickassery. And just listen to that deep voice. Wait, I got to rewind that just a little bit. Back this up just a little bit so you can hear him singing Body of Christ, because that's one of those notes that I can hit like early in the morning around a rare day, or for like, you know, I kind of have a cold, but generally I can't hit it. But here we go. Here's our Body of Christ here from Peter. Corpus Christi. Yes. And here we go.
Body of Christ.
Body of Christ. Yes! Oh, Peter, God damn it, I love you. So, for those of you sitting at home listening, see if you can hit that note. I know females will be excluded unless you've been smoking 5 packs a day since you were 7. But man, what a great note. And now it's all nice and tranquil and happy.
She'd like to know.
That's the brilliance of Peter. He's just an incredible guy. And I've only played Christian Woman. This is still one song, by the way, that we've been playing in the background. Peter does have a knack, much like Dream Theater or Rush, say, to write ridiculously long songs. And they don't get boring. It's pretty amazing. Here's probably one of their most famous tunes, Black Number One. Which was, given decent airplay back in the day. I don't remember it, because I know my radio stations certainly didn't play Type O, but my radio station is the one that I owned back when I was 8.
Boy, I found her.
I found her.
It's Peter.
She's in love with herself. She likes the dark.
So this song is great because it's really just poking fun at the goth community.
And on her milk white neck.
And Peter is not only sort of part of that community, but certainly embraced by the goth community. So it's really great that I'm pretty sure at this point he was making fun of an ex-girlfriend. Listen to Josh's corny keyboard in the background.
Will she trick or treat? I bet she will.
Peter giving you a little taste of his higher end. Happy Halloween. Baby.
She's got a daylight speedlight with Nosferatu.
If you have a date at midnight with Nosferatu, you gotta be pretty badass. So this is another one of his ridiculous 12-minute songs. Actually, you know what? I was talking about how this probably got a lot of airplay. This is definitely one of the more famous singles, but here's a song that, by the way, this entire album is just unreal. It's great. With a couple different songs that feature kind of a different style, a song that actually a lot of people might recognize Type O for is a song that's not even theirs. They did a cover of the song Summer Breeze by Seals and Crofts, which if you heard the original version, I didn't hear the original version. I might have heard it as a kid, just didn't know what it was. But after having heard this cover so many times, and I actually went back and listened to the original Seals and Crofts song, it's so lame. This is such a great cover because it makes that song actually really badass. This was actually featured on, for those of you playing, keeping score at home, this was featured on the movie I Know What You Did Last Summer. Remember that one with, what's her face? What the hell's her name? The chick that was on that show with all those dudes. God, wow. Great pop culture knowledge coming back to me right now. Yeah, it was like a Friends type show, but it wasn't. Jennifer Love Hewitt, that's her name. Damn. So anyway, the song, the movie about the killer fisherman or whatever, this is the song that actually starts that movie off. Which now that I'm saying it, I kind of feel like it taints the awesomeness of Type O Negative, because that movie's pretty corny, but this song is amazing.
Yeah.
There you go. There again is Peter with his awesome low voice. What a great album. So, again, highly recommended. Pick up Bloody Kisses. And in fact, if you don't know anything about Typo, it might be a cool place to start, because you'll be thoroughly impressed with their later releases. And again, that's only a small sampling of what's on this album. Blood and Fire is a great song. Can't Lose You. Actually, I'll play just a little bit of Can't Lose You. Mostly because of the end is that really cracks me up. I mean, it's a beautiful song, but here we go. Let me just skip ahead here. Little psychedelia in the background with the sitar. So as this plays, one of the funny things is that they had a couple of jokes in their liner notes and stuff that were total inside jokes. So you can hear in the background the other band members singing, the harmonies. And they're credited in the albums, at least in Bloody Kisses and October Rust, as being additional vocals provided by the Bensonhoist Lesbian Choir. So I always thought that was great, because it's actually just the other bandmates singing in falsetto. And then in the background here at the very end of the song, they start chanting stuff, and it's hard to hear what they're saying. And I remember a long time ago, someone had posted something on a website devoted to Typo that they had actually, gotten word from the band members somehow. I don't know how closely related they were to the band, but they got the lyrics to what they're actually saying. And you can kind of hear it in the background when they start singing. They start chanting, "Everybody smokes pot," and Monty Connor, who I think was like their publicist or something at the time, "sucks cock." So you can kind of hear it when they come in here in a minute. It always cracked me up, because I love stuff like that. You think it's something meaningful, and they're totally just clowning on one of their friends. Well, and talking about pot smoke. Okay, still, again, this is another one, ridiculously long song. Just scroll a little bit further ahead. Okay, here we go. All right, here you can hear it a little bit. So I love that. It's like this beautiful chanting in the background. They're just saying, "Everybody smokes pot. Monty Connor sucks cock." And as Peter said in one of his interviews, he says, "I'm about as deep as a puddle," which I know is totally self-deprecating and a joke, because even if he meant it, it's not true. Peter is a brilliant man. So there you go. Bloody Kisses. Go pick that shit up. The next one, again, God, and the next album, again, begs to be talked about more, because it's really damn good. And in my opinion, easily this band's greatest effort. And here, I'll play a little trivia for you, see if you can recognize what band this is before I start talking about them. I think most of you have probably already gotten this one. Yes, it's the Smashing Pumpkins. There's Billy Corgan. Awesome album, Siamese Dream, which came out in 93. Another one of those kind of childhood-defining albums. I remember listening to this a bunch with my friend Jay Michael, and it reminds me back when I was in a swim camp in Mercersburg. Remember this had heavy rotation there. And this is a great album. Again, this really speaks to Billy Corgan's versatility, but also his meticulousness, his assiduous attention to detail. from what I've read about this album, he, even though like James Iha and Darcy, the bassist, and Chamberlain, I'm blanking on his first name, Chamberlain, the guy that was the drummer, the guy that was the drummer, that sounded really intelligent, the drummer, that's what they're usually called, not the guy, whatever. So yeah, God, I cannot remember his first name. His last name is Chamberlain. Anyway, he had a problem with heroin and something, they kicked him out for a couple of years and he came back. But from what I understand, Billy Corgan actually, even though he had a backing band, ended up playing a lot of the instruments himself on the album because he just couldn't stand that, you know, the others weren't completely perfect. So from what I've read, he's kind of difficult to work with, but, you know, at the same time, just like Trent Reznor or David Pincher, people that pay very close attention to what they're doing, it usually ends up being a better product. Yes, Today, what a good song, with a really bizarre video with they're driving around an ice cream truck. But so you got that, you know, a very, very, very pop friendly, very radio friendly song like Today, and then you have more of a rock song here, the song Quiet, which is anything but, really, but the second song of Siamese Dream. I really like the tone of Billy's guitar. Billy and James Iha, I guess you should say. Whatever distortion they're using there is really cool. Cool little fuzz box. I'm not really sure exactly what tone they're using, but it's cool. This is one of those albums kind of like, if you remember Alanis Morissette's album, or, gosh, you know, Michael Jackson, of course, you know, songs or albums that produce just an insane amount of singles. This is one of them. So, of course, Today, this wasn't one of the singles, but Today was definitely a big single, as was the song Cherub Rock, which is actually the very first song on the album. Another one of their singles, Cherub Rock, and you know, I'd be interested to hear from y'all what you like, which Pumpkins album you like the most, because I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that their next album was the double album, A Melancholy in the Infinite Sadness, which also produced a few singles, but in my opinion, it just wasn't as, even though it was, you know, the double album, tons of songs, it wasn't as consistent as Siamese Dream, which I think just has some awesome songs. Here's another one of their singles, Rocket, off Siamese Dream. Getting close to an hour, so I'm going to bail on some of these. And of course, everyone remembers this song, Disarm. This is one of their big hits back in the day. Chimes. Thank you.
Disarm you with a smile.
course. And actually, this is probably, well, I don't know, there's so many good songs to choose from this album, but this is one of my more favorite songs off the album, called Mayonnaise. I have no idea why it's titled that. But a really cool kind of down-tempo little shoegazer type rocker. And I really like this song. There's some really beautiful chord structures and harmonies and melodies in the song. And of course, I'm talking over all of it. And of course, this is only intro. Oh, I suck at this, don't I? Let me skip ahead a little bit. Gosh, what a lovely song, truly is. And then actually, is it before this? I think it's Geek USA. Here's a fun little rocker. This is a good driving song, I always thought. I love the sound of that snare drum, too. Oh, so awesome. All right, well, we're getting close to the end here. Actually, I had two more things to talk about, so I'll give them an honorable mention. Play just a few snippets of that. The first one is from one of the few hip-hop groups that I actually really like, which is Cypress Hill. Their first album came out in 93, self-titled album in 91 rather, came out in 91, and it's great. It has such great production elements to it. It's so funky, which is what I love about it. Like, I hate when I listen to quote-unquote hip-hop now, it's just the most minimalist crap you can ever hear in the world, with some producer that came up with like the cheesiest beat and some crappy electronic lead in the background, and then some guy rapping over. This actually had phenomenal beats and some great cool bass lines and stuff like that. But I think most people probably discover them, as I did, from Black Sunday, which is their second album, which came out in 93. And yeah, I think everybody knows. Whoops. Sorry, Billy. I think everybody knows.
Were you trying to get crazy?
What song I'm talking about?
Don't you know I'm loco?
I'm thinking it's all over when I go out drinking. Oh! You gotta love Sin Dog in the background. Sin Dog. What a great lyric. Fat boy on a diet. Don't try it. But lest we not forget certain awesome other songs on this album. Particularly the awesome song Hits from the Bong, which is for some reason eluding me right now on my iPod. Here we go. Which uses an awesome sample from Son of a Preacher Man. Someone toking in the background there. Inhale. Just got an ounce in the mail. You gotta love Cypress Hill. How can you? I mean, they're just so unabashedly big fans of marijuana. You gotta love them. They're great. Be Real is so funny. Real quick, just wanted to mention Cypress Hill there with Black Sunday. And then another hip-hop outfit, which I was introduced to by Dave, who in turn, I believe, was introduced by our friend Roger. And this is a rapper, a very, very hardcore gangster rapper named Spice One out of the Bay Area. Motherfucking Bay Area, actually. Album called 187 he wrote, and has a lot of really fun tracks. Let's see. I mean, with songs such as Running Out the Crack House, I mean, how can you not be happy? But I particularly like Clipping the Trigger and The Heist. Play a little bit of Clipping the Trigger. I have this memorized, which is really quite scary, but it's true. Yeah, motherfucking East Bay gangster back in the house. A.K.A. Mr. Kill Your Ass, 187 Fat Motherfucker, 9 Stripe, G-Nut in the motherfucking house, Big John that goddamn bass. See if I can do this full verse, I'd be very proud of myself. I'm 22 with a motherfucking beer belly. Some say I'm an OG already. When I was young, I had the nuts to pull the trigger. Spice One, the giggity gangster nigga. Oh shit, it's the Glock in the clip. Put the clip in the Glock. Put the Glock by my jock in my neighborhood. Niggas try to get ya, better watch out. Spice One is getting faster. Quick to let the dick hang. Listen to this bitch saying my name is Mr. Smarts, but I think I'm going nuts, man. Better back up off Fiji, I think I'm blacking out. And every time I do, niggas get fucked in the mouth. I keep on in the chamber so I can burst you first. But my nana's in your dome. I think I wanna burst this. Switching personalities to another nigga. Spice One is the clip. The gangsta is the trigger. Oh! So tell me, just step into my posse. The one that's saving us hopeless like the life squad. One of those things down the line, you know, when you look back on your life and you think, why did I devote a special place in my brain for all those lyrics to reside? I don't know. I could have learned a different language, maybe. I don't know. Could have figured out how to paint a picture. But no, I chose to learn how to sing, or rather rap, Spice One's Clip and the Trigger. And, oh well, what are you going to do? And yes, I fully recognize that I used the word nigga, but I was reciting lyrics, so give me a break. there it goes. I mean, that word is used excessively liberally in this song, or in this album. So anyway, it's been fun. I'm going to leave you with the song The Heist, which is basically what got me into the Spice One originally anyway, because it's just it's so funny. But anyway, it's been fun hanging with you peeps, and I hope you enjoyed this. If you have any special requests, let me know. I'm just getting all this stuff started, so we'll see what's going on. I'll have to set up an email account, blah, 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 blah. But I hope you enjoy this. Next time, I think I will do albums from 1994 and have a couple more things waiting in the wings. So anyway, I will catch you later. Enjoy Spice One with the heist. Peace out. It's the motherfucking heist, so don't